Welcome to episode 511 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Ballard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Josh, you were so specific with your introduction there, so deliberate with your timing of your wording. I was wondering if you forgot what you were welcoming people to.
Yeah, you could say that I was being deliberate, or I was just tripping over my words trying to find the notes that I read from for every single introduction, even though it's always the same every single week.
This is what happens when we miss a week. Years.
Yeah, sure. Let's blame it on that. I'm cool with that. Totally cool with that. No, we did miss a week. Sorry about that. My life has been nuts, and I apologize for that. But things are evening out, I think. I hope. Please. So we're back. We're back this week. We got a fair amount of news to cover. We've got a little bit of feedback to cover, which was sent in to us at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com. And the first message is from Steve.
And it's kind of for me, sort of. So I'm going to read this one. So Steve says, just listening to episode 509 of Entertainment 2.0, at the end of the show, Richard was discussing retiring his Windows home server and finding a home for his Ubiquiti service. He should take a good look at setting up an Unraid server on that hardware. Unraid is like the ultimate power user NAS. I was leaning towards a Synology solution, but I opted for Unraid for maximum flexibility. Hardware choices, enclosure type, NIC, and disk controller types. I thought it'd be too difficult to set up, but after a 30-day trial and some trial and error, I bought a license for my server, which was $129 for unlimited devices. And he then goes on and lists a whole bunch of stuff that Unraid can do, and I'm going to pull out a couple of these. I'm not going to go through all of them, Josh, but he mentions a couple things, like, of course, it can pool drives the same way the Drobo and Windows Storage can and stuff like that. It can run services in containers, Docker containers, which is really cool. I'm going to have to learn how to use Dockers. I don't think it's just pants anymore. And it can obviously run virtual machines. Hey, you know, I'm a guy from the 90s. And a whole bunch of other stuff that would be pretty useful for a home media and home controller kind of server. So it's definitely worth looking into. And he goes on and he says, I know Richard's an Apple fanboy too. And have you looked into using Infuse 6 as an alternate front end to Plex on the Apple TV? So new topic here. He gives us a link to this and he says, Infuse has native support for Plex and can play back videos with Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos supported. I found that the speed to playback and the scrubbing of 4K UHD content is outstanding. I started using it a few months ago for playback of my 4K UHD Blu-ray rips, and it is my go-to interface for 4K UHD playback. He also says, I know that Josh has no time for either of these projects. Besides, he's behind on Homeland. Appreciate the show as always. Okay, on the Unraid stuff, you make some really good arguments, but I want to buy something that's just there and ready to go. And I just have to flick switches that says, yes, turn on the Plex server or whatever things that I want to do on it. I don't know that I really want to set stuff up anymore, and I'm tired of maintaining my own boxes. That's the other piece of it, you know.
Yeah,
it used to be fun. Now I just don't have time for it, so I'm not really leaning too much in that direction. But you make some good arguments for sure. Now on the Plex side, talking about Infuse, I didn't even know about this. This sounds really, really cool.
This sounds perfect for you.
Yeah. I need to check this out. I have not yet, but I am going to look into this for sure.
Yeah, that's an awesome suggestion. And if any of our listeners, any of our other listeners other than Steve, have used Infuse for watching their Plex content on Apple TV, let us know. We would love to hear your feedback. If you haven't, but would like to check it out, we will definitely have a link to that app in our show notes over at thedigitalmediazone.com.
Very good. So thanks for the email.
Yeah, definitely. And then we had one other short message from David. He wanted to point out that, you know, Richard is way better at podcasting than I am. And so,
I don't really think that's what he said.
That's what he meant when he said, Home On is on Spotify. Where the heck is Entertainment 2.0? Okay, I'm putting a whole lot of words in his mouth. But he was basically just wondering, when is Entertainment 2.0 going to make it on Spotify? And the answer is about 20 minutes ago, I'd say. Yeah. Yeah, so in the past, gosh, David, it's already done. No, it's there now. I don't know. This is something that just slid off of my radar. And because when podcast first showed up on Spotify, you had to be, you know, super special and one of the cool kids. And let me tell you, folks, I have never been one of the cool kids ever in my life. So that wasn't going to help us out. But now it's way easier to get Spotify or to get your podcast on Spotify. So now you can listen to Entertainment 2.0 and Home on Spotify. Yeah. So thanks, David, for poking and prodding and getting me off of my butt and doing that.
Well, I mean, in all fairness, it's not that we hadn't tried before. I had submitted everything initially when they first launched, but you ended up on a waiting list that they never got back to. So, you know, we didn't qualify, apparently.
Right. Like I said, not one of the cool kids. Not me. All right. So let's move on to some of our news here. So let's start with video news like we normally do. And I would say the biggest news over really the last couple of weeks is kind of a shakeup from what's going on over in the land of AT&T. Like, it seems like AT&T stuff is just constantly changing. And I'm having a hard time keeping up with all of it because they own so many different things and they keep kind of moving things around and killing services and starting new ones.
Changing names, and promoting new ones, deprecating right. old ones.
Yeah, I don't know how anybody keeps track
of all going to be better now, right? They have the golden egg offering now, right?
Maybe. Let's see. Let's dig into this. So it's called AT&T TV. So at least the name is simple, right? The name makes sense. It's not like DirecTV Now and all of this other craziness. AT&T TV. That's a lot of T's, but it's a name that makes sense. So what this is an online live TV streaming service. So think YouTube TV, Hulu with live TV, Sling TV, those types of things. But it's not just the service like those other ones are. It's really trying to say, if you liked the old model where we would send you a box and you would pay us and you would get access to all of your stuff, then let's keep doing that. That's what this is. So they're going to send you a box, and this box is an Android TV based box, which has all kinds of advantages. You know, there's tons of apps. There's a remote that has Google Assistant built in, you know, like all of the great stuff of Android TV plus their service. Okay. So that's all good. 500 hours of cloud DVR. That's good. 500 hours is a lot, I think. Here's where it really starts to go downhill. The pricing. Of course, it's the pricing, right? First off, they're sticking with the old model of doing things. You have to sign up for a 2-year contract for this.
Yeah. This is strike one. There are right. There are two more, but this is strike one.
At least two more. Okay, so for the first year, it's $50 a month for the base package. So that price is good. That's super competitive. It's right in line with YouTube. It's right in line with Hulu with live TV. It's in the neighborhood of both of those.
To be fair, that's $50 a month for their entry package, which does, I believe, have more channels than any of those competitors that you just mentioned.
I think it might. I was trying to look through the channel list earlier to see if there was anything that I would want that wasn't available in the lowest priced package. And
right.
the list was super long.
It's 70 different channels. So
yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't get to make it through the end of the list because I was looking for it, and then the dinner bell rang, so I had to close my laptop and go eat dinner. So it's long, and there's three tiers, so you can get even more. Like, this is very much structured like your typical cable TV package. Okay, so it's $50 a month for the first 12 months. After that, it goes up to $93 a month for that base package. 93.
There's strike two.
There's strike two.
And let's talk about the other packages. So the big package that they have has 170 channels. Now you're talking kind of like what you would get from a cable service.
Mm-hmm.
It is $70 a month for the first year, and then it goes up to $135 a month.
Wow.
After that, for the second year. And remember, this is a 2-year contract, so you're committed to that second year at $135 a month. I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe that's way more than you're going to pay many cable companies for a 170-channel package.
It seems like it to me. Now, you can get out of the contract. You can cancel it in that second year.
Oh, sure.
Year.
It's just like the old days when you canceled a contract with your mobile provider. You pay a penalty.
Right. Yeah, $15 a month. Yikes. Okay.
Oh, by the way, did we mention there's an activation fee? That's strike three. There's an activation fee for an over-the-top service.
That is ridiculous. That might be the most ridiculous part of this whole thing.
$20.
Yeah. Yep. $20 activation. And if you want an additional box, those boxes are $120. That's strike four.
Strike four. $120 for an Android box.
Yeah.
Come on.
These things are probably $50 boxes tops.
Now, granted, they have storage in them. No, they don't. It's a cloud DVR. No.
Oh, right.
Oh, my God. Unbelievable. Just like whatever VP, or at this level, it's got to be like a senior VP or a president of the organization that is running this and driving this group and this decision making. They have lost their ever friggin' mind.
Yeah, I don't know how this service lasts. Like, I do, because I think I read that UVerse is going away.
Yeah, well, sure, correct? They're going to shut it down. I mean, why wouldn't they?
Right. So I guess if UVerse was one of your only options, then I guess this becomes that option, especially if you don't realize that there are things like YouTube TV and stuff out there, because you can buy a $50 streaming device and subscribe to any of those other services and get basically all of this. Now, maybe not quite as many channels, but pretty much the rest of this for so much less money.
Yep. Yeah, I don't know what they're thinking. And in doing this, they're also really deprecating their support of DirecTV. I mean, they have as much as come out and said that they're really not going to be promoting DirecTV much anymore.
Yeah.
It's ludicrous. This is just absolutely ludicrous. Now, you talked about all these other AT&T television services. Something that I want to remind people about is that if you're an AT&T wireless customer and you have one of their unlimited plans, you should check to see what your plan benefits are, because one of the things that I get with my unlimited AT&T wireless plan is AT&T Watch TV, which is a service just like Sling TV. What it doesn't have is it doesn't have locals, but it has about 40, like somewhere between 40 and 50 cable channels that you can then watch on any device anywhere you are. And I get it free. Hmm. It's just part of my service. In fact, because I also have the addition of like the Premier or whatever they call it, where I also have a hotspot on my device, then I also have the ability to choose an extra package on top of that. So I get HBO. The HBO service that I have is through AT&T on top of that Watch AT&T service. So, I mean, my point being that they have all this other stuff already, they kind of don't know what to do with all these different things they have from their various acquisitions, and they're kicking everything to the curb. Watch TV isn't going away. DirecTV isn't going away. The old AT&T TV Now, not going away. They're just not going to pay any attention to it anymore. Now, at some point, they may shut some of those off.
Mm-hmm. So this AT&T Watch TV, I think, is the service you said that you get with your phone subscription?
Yep.
I'm going to guess that there's no way to watch that on a TV, though. Is that right?
No, there absolutely is. I can load it onto my Apple TV. I have it on my Amazon TV for when I'm traveling so that I can get the cable channels that I want and I know where they are. No, you absolutely can use it. Now, it doesn't have DVR service or anything like that, but
right.
For simple live TV with, you know, an interface that you're familiar with and channels that you've favorited and everything else that you can just take with you and use anywhere, it's great.
That sounds pretty amazing.
So I want people to look into that. If you have AT&T Wireless as your wireless service, go to the website, see if this is one of the benefits that you get. You may have to dig for it a little bit to find out. And if you do, consider signing up for it. And geez, this the money that they're asking people for here and the nerve of asking for a 2-year contract when companies like Verizon and others have said, you know what, this contract thing, we're going to offer plans that don't require that anymore.
Yeah. And none of these other online streaming services have contracts. None of them.
Yeah, this is a holdover from the DirecTV mentality.
Yep. It absolutely is. So let's talk about one of their competitors.
Let's do that. Let's talk about Hulu's live TV option. Hulu has had a live TV option for a while now, but they've been slow rolling it out to the different platforms. It is finally available on PlayStation 4. So if you are a Hulu subscriber and you use your PlayStation 4 as your streaming device, now your Hulu app is going to be able to support live TV. Now, maybe you were using it already on a different device. You can have it all in the same place if you want to. If not, you might be able to sign up for live TV and just add that to your Hulu subscription. It's $50. You get 60 some channels. It does include the major locals. So you get ABC, CBS, NBC, Fox, and the various cable channels. And you can watch it on up to 2 devices, and you get like 50 hours of DVR service before you have to actually buy a DVR add-on. I have not played with Hulu Live TV at all. Josh, have you had a chance to check this out?
I think I did a trial of it during the last Olympic Games. Olympics are a great time to check out trials of these services.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah. So it's been a long time. And the only thing I really remember about it was that the user interface was weird.
Mm-hmm.
It was real weird.
I have heard that. Now, I have also heard that they dramatically improved the user interface and have a more traditional guide experience and stuff like that now.
Okay. Well, might be worth checking out. And where this really makes the most sense is for all of those PlayStation View subscribers who now don't have that on any device, but especially their PlayStation 4. And the timing of all of this sure makes it seem like maybe Sony didn't want Hulu with live TV on their PlayStation 4 because they wanted people to use PlayStation View.
That's a really interesting thought. Because when you said timing, I'm like, yeah, but they're a month late. But yeah,
they are.
Yeah, but it does make sense, doesn't it? They might have made it so that it was financially disadvantageous for Hulu to try and add this service there. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. All right. One more video story for you all. And that is, this is one that's not too surprising. In fact, I think this was announced that it would eventually happen last year. But FX is now going to be putting all of their streaming stuff exclusively on Hulu. Hulu makes sense because, you know, Disney owns Hulu and owns Fox, which means they also own FX. So it's part of this giant media conglomerate that is Disney. So basically, the vast majority of FX shows that you're looking for now on Hulu, with a whole lot more coming soon. They're also going to be bringing some, what they're calling FX originals, coming exclusively to Hulu. Now, to me, that makes it sound like a Hulu original, not an FX original. If it's only going to be on Hulu, isn't that a Hulu original?
Nope, they're calling them FX originals.
That's weird.
Well, it's not really, because it's the FX branding that is now part of Disney, which is all bundled into the Hulu experience.
Sure, but if the show is only on Hulu, why isn't it a Hulu original?
Okay, but you could say the same of National Geographic originals that are on Disney Plus.
Yeah, and I think I do.
They're National Geographic originals.
If you say so. I think it's dumb.
I think the brand is important, and in particular with FX. FX has become known for their really kind of edgy, groundbreaking storytelling that you just don't get on most Hulu shows, let alone other networks or anything. And, you know, the examples they have with shows that they're going to include here, Justified, Sons of Anarchy, Rescue Me. I mean, these are shows that were really pushing the limits of what you could do on TV at the time.
Yeah.
And so also adding FX originals specifically there, I think that brand means something to consumers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. FX is a brand that definitely means things to consumers. But what I think is confusing is if I go to work and tell somebody, hey, did you hear about this new FX original? Are you going to check it out? They'll be like, oh, but I don't have FX. Oh, well, it's okay. You don't need FX to watch an FX original. You just need Hulu. Wait, what? I thought you said it was an FX original. Maybe it's just me. But I think that's super weird.
Yeah, I think I don't have a problem with it. Because Hulu's the home for FX now. So
I guess. But so is your cable provider.
But not for streaming it.
No, I know, but when we talk about originals on streaming providers, we list them as streaming provider originals. And FX isn't the streaming provider here. It's not on the FX app. It's on the Hulu app.
I really don't understand why there's still an FX app. That's a different issue.
Hopefully they'll kill that soon, because it doesn't make sense. All right, that's probably enough video news for the week. Let's move on to some audio news. We got a redesign of the Spotify app that all I can do is look at pictures of, because so far it's only on iOS. And if I remember correctly, you're not a Spotify user right now.
I'm not a Spotify user. I'm an Amazon Music and Apple Music user right now, paying for both for some reason.
Because you're not paying for AT&T TV, so you have the money to spend on both of them.
There you go.
So this isn't like a massive overhaul in what they're doing, but it does look nice. So basically, if you're a Spotify user, you're probably pretty used to what the screen looks like when you're looking at a playlist. So you get a piece of artwork at the top. Like if it's a whole bunch of different albums, it shows like four different album art things in a square mosaic thing at the top. And then you've got a giant green button that says shuffle play. And then below that, if you're a premium subscriber, you've got an entire row of space taken up to allow you to download the playlist, which downloading is useful, but it's taken up a ton of screen real estate. Now, all of that stuff, including a couple of extra things, are basically in one vertical row of space. So the giant shuffle play button is now just a circle green button with a white like kind of play arrow, and like in a similar circle inside of it is the little shuffle icon. So there's no words, but you're supposed to know that that means the play shuffle button. And then in that same row is a heart icon for you to favorite the list. There's also a download button that looks like a download button that you would expect to see. They just use the same download button that they use for a podcast within Spotify. So it's basically just easier access to some of the stuff that wasn't like the favoriting thing wasn't even on that screen previously. You had to use a context menu to get to it. And it takes up a whole lot less space. The other main change is that, and this really comes into play with playlists that are bringing in music from lots of different artists and albums, is now there's a small piece of album artwork to the left of every track that's in that playlist, which can help make it easier for you to find what it is that you're actually looking for. And at the very least, just makes it a little bit prettier.
I'm surprised it didn't have it yet.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised too. I never really thought about it, but it makes total sense. Yeah. So yeah. Richard, you're way more into UI and user experience design type stuff. I know you're only looking at screenshots, which really doesn't give you the full impact of the user experience, but what do you think?
Yeah, overall, I think it's fine. I think it's following a lot of the design trends that we're seeing in applications, big, huge artwork, and kind of consolidation of most used features in a common space in the application. So I'm pretty good with this. I should probably re-sign up for a free account just so that I could actually see what this is like. But I know that when they redesigned last time, which was, well, I was in my old house, so that was at least 7 years ago. It was fine. It wasn't anything that I was like, oh, this is so good. I love this. And I kind of feel the same way about most of the music apps that I use. I think Apple Music is probably one of the exceptions where I feel like it does a really good job of having exactly the functions that I want right in front of my face when I need them. Mm. And the other ones are just kind of like, yeah, it does what it needs to do. Sonos gets worse and worse over the years.
All right. Well, if you're on iOS, this is available now. If you're on Android, they say it's coming soon. But Spotify's track record with Android is a little dicey, so I don't really know what soon means. It could be months. Hopefully not, because that's what I use.
Yeah.
All right, on to our gaming news. So obviously Richard is going to pick up the rest of the show here.
Yeah, let's go for it. All right.
Richard, how excited are you for the Xbox Series X and all of those teraflops?
I am clearly losing my ever-loving mind.
Richard, how many teraflops would it take for you to buy the next Xbox?
Yeah, I'm not going to do it.
Okay, well, we're joking about teraflops, of course, because Phil Spencer wrote an article. This is kind of weird. Phil Spencer wrote an article for Xbox Wire to confirm some technical details of the Series X. Like, they didn't save this for E3. This wasn't part of some big video presentation or anything. Nope, it's just a blog post out on Xbox Wire. And they're confirming 12 teraflops of performance. Teraflops is the flop part there, floating point operations. So that's a math thing. How many is 12 versus what we've got now? Well, it's twice the performance of the Xbox One X, and it's 8 times the performance of the original Xbox One, the one that looked like a giant VCR that came out in 2013. That one. They talked about some other stuff that isn't really new, but it's just worth quickly recapping some of it. It will have hardware accelerated ray tracing. They're going to do quick resume. That's not new. The Xbox One did quick resume, where like if you're playing a game and then turn your Xbox off and turn it back on, it would immediately be where you left off. That's cool. But now it's somehow going to support that for multiple titles. So like if I'm playing Forza Horizon and a friend gets on and says, hey, let's play Gears, I can switch to Gears, and then I won't have to wait the 10 and a half years for Forza Horizon to load because it's got this quick resume functionality.
Now, that's really smart.
It's super smart. And it's probably not nearly as big of a deal on the Series X because it's already going to load so much faster than all of the previous consoles.
Well,
but it will be nice.
You say that, but the games are going to get bigger because they can, right? We were just talking about that a couple of episodes ago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they definitely will. But like, there's a lot of caveats here. So if I was playing The Division, which is an online game, I can't really do quick resume there, right? Because it's an online persistent world.
It's online.
They can't pause the rest of the world for
right.
me.
And
boy, would that be sweet, though.
And in the chat, Rob is pointing out that it doesn't work on some titles. Some titles don't even support it.
Yeah, right. It is up to the developer to do a little bit of work there to support it. But when it's there, it will be nice. Because I can't tell you how many times I've been like playing one game. A friend gets on, like, let's say I've got a couple of friends that I would normally play NHL with. So they hop on and I'm like, all right, I guess I'll switch to NHL. And they're not ready to play yet. So then it's, oh, crap. Now I have to reload Call of Duty or whatever it was. And it takes a while. These games just take too long to load. So this will be really, really nice, especially if it's widely supported. A lot of this other stuff is not news at all, but it's going to support the auto low latency mode to like can switch your TV over into that mode. Can switch your TV into variable refresh rate mode. Those are good for getting the best performance of your games. But if you're someone who like spends a whole bunch of time calibrating your TV for it to look perfect, you're going to want to turn this off because those modes typically increase latency. So this is a kind of a struggle that we've been dealing with in TVs for a while now. You kind of have to choose between, do you want it to look the absolute best? Or do you want it to absolutely reduce latency as much as possible? And in some games, it really, really matters. So there's those options for you. They reiterated 4 generations of backwards compatibility. Pretty much everything you can play on your Xbox One now, which obviously includes all Xbox One games, hundreds of Xbox 360 games, and dozens maybe of original Xbox games all available on the Xbox One. All of those will work on the Xbox Series X too, or at least almost all of them. So that's really, really great news. And then this last one, this one's been getting like made fun of a lot by pretty much everybody in the games media that I've heard report on this. It's called Smart Delivery. And I think they're getting made fun of because when this article was written, the benefit of it was not described correctly at all by Phil Spencer, if he's the one who actually wrote the article. So they wrote it as Smart Delivery allows you to get the correct version of the game for the console you're installing it on. Well, no kidding. That's how every game console has always worked, right? You know, if I'm installing a game on my Xbox, I don't expect it to download the PlayStation version, you know, or something else crazy. What this actually means, though, is that you can, it'll give you all of the right assets for your console. So there's the obvious thing of if you're playing on Xbox One, you're only going to get the Xbox One related things. Whereas on the Xbox Series X, there might be additional things. The other thing that it'll do is if you're connected to a 4K TV and can support 4K assets, it'll download the 4K assets. If you're not, it won't download.
Right, more importantly, if you're not.
More importantly, if you're not, it'll save you tons of gigabytes by not downloading all of those 4K assets.
Right.
So that's a big part of Smart Delivery, which is cool. And then the other part is that some developers, and the biggest one so far has been CD Projekt Red. They have one of the biggest games coming out this year, Cyberpunk 2077. It's coming out in the fall, I think in September, and it's coming out on Xbox One and PlayStation 4 in the fall. They've already said there will not be next gen versions, so PS5, Xbox Series X versions, until next year. But what they also said is that when those upgrades and stuff are ready for the next generation, you don't have to buy the game again. And this is unusual. This is not how it's typically worked in the past. You know, Grand Theft Auto 5, it came out on the Xbox 360. Everyone in the universe bought it. And then within a year, all of those people bought an Xbox One. And guess what they did? Dropped another $60 to play Grand Theft Auto 5 on their Xbox One. So this is a really huge deal. And I'm really happy to see the biggest game coming out this fall, maybe this year, that developer is not going to charge you extra to play it on a new machine. And hopefully this will encourage other third-party game developers to do the same. But we don't know for sure, but all of that technology is there, so they absolutely can do this. And I fully expect everything from Xbox Game Studios to work the same way. So we'll of course find out later, but that's absolutely what I'm expecting out of smart delivery. And it's a way bigger deal than what most of the other media has been reporting it as.
Okay.
All right. The other thing that you don't have to wait for, if you've got an Xbox One, you've got a new dashboard to look at.
Hey, I noticed that.
All of that stuff again. So there's really only two main areas that they touched here. The main home screen, where instead of having like home and then Game Pass and Mixer and community and the store as separate twist, they're calling them twist. It's basically horizontal scrolling. Now they're all just rows. So you scroll down to get to all of those things. And then the other area that they changed is the games and apps section. That one, they didn't even have a good screenshot for what they did there. I had to go and look at my Xbox and take a picture of it with my phone just to be able to report on this. Basically, when you go to games and apps now, you have the ability to, like, essentially, when you click into, I'm trying to get the image to load up here, the all games section, it then gives you like four or five different categories. So like mine says all owned games, 149, all owned apps, 56, Xbox Game Pass games, 100+, and then games with gold that I own, 68. So then you can easily filter down by those categories. And then it also has a section for EA Access if you have that. So Richard, you have gotten a chance to check out the new interface. What do you think of all of the vertical scrolling now instead of using these twists to sort of go horizontally?
You call them twists, I call them tabs, whatever. I kind of like it because I thought that the tab metaphor that they introduced in whatever this previous interim design language was that Xbox was using was kind of lame. I didn't really like it that much. And so I think I mentioned when they came out with this row model before, where they had all of these, like, you know, you have one thing with your pins, you have this other thing with the features that they have. You have another one with maybe the last game that you played. That interface reminds me so much of Media Center. It has that whole, you know, you're scrolling row by row, and the row that you select then brings up the tiles for that row. And I like that a lot. So I kind of like that they moved everything into that model. I also like that you can turn any of them off. So right. I don't care about Game Pass or Mixer or Community, because that has nothing to do with me watching Blu-ray discs.
Right.
So I just turned them off and they don't even appear there, which is really nice. And then the other thing that they introduced a while ago that I hadn't really taken advantage of because I couldn't think of a real reason for doing it was that I created a second pin group basically just for media playback, not media services, but for like Blu-ray and Plex and my video library or whatever that thing is called. And so that I now have as a pin group that I display on my home screen as a separate row. And I actually made that my first row above my normal pins because that's what I'm there for more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think that the vertical scrolling is easier to figure out how to use. I hadn't thought about its resemblance to Media Center, but you're right about that. It is a little bit like that. The only thing that I didn't like about it was that when it first gets installed, it puts all of those things like Game Pass and Mixer and Community above any group that you've made.
Oh, of course it does.
And I made my own group of pins
right.
that I want access to quickly.
They're still there. Not, they're like just said, way down there.
Right. I have to press down like 6 times before I get to my pins.
You can change that though. You can move them around.
Right. And that's the big thing. They made it customizable. So I was able to move it all the way up to the top. And yeah, it's good. It's way better. It's so much better. You know, about 6 months before we get a new console.
Well, before you get a new console.
Well, right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's the new update. Oh, Joe in the chat says the only thing he doesn't like is the Mixer integration. He said it's too easy to accidentally leave a stream. That would be pretty annoying. So we might be using Mixer to stream this podcast right now, but I got to admit, I don't actually watch much on Mixer. So that's not something I've played with yet on the new interface. Okay, last couple of updates in the gaming section. It is now March, so we've got new free games on the Xbox side and on the PlayStation side. Games with Gold on Xbox all month long. Xbox One, Batman, The Enemy Within, the March 16th through April 15th. The other Xbox One game is Shantae Half Genie Hero. I feel like this was a Games with Gold before, or maybe it was just another game in the series. I'm not sure. And then your backwards compatible games for the first half of the month, Castlevania, Lords of Shadow 2, and for the second half of the month, Sonic Generations. So those are your free Xbox games this month. For the PlayStation side, PlayStation Plus, of course, required here. Frankly, some better offerings here, which has really been the case for the last few months between Xbox and PlayStation. On PlayStation 4, you're getting Shadow of the Colossus. Yes, it's a remake of a PlayStation 3 game, but Shadow of the Colossus is one of those big tentpole PlayStation exclusive games that was incredible. So available for free if you're on PS Plus. And then the other one is Sonic Forces. It is kind of interesting that both platforms have a Sonic the Hedgehog game free this month, but it's probably because they just released a Sonic the Hedgehog movie, right?
That would make sense.
Yeah. Okay. So that's it for all of our news. Let's get into what's going on in our entertainment centers.
2 weeks. So much. Okay.
This is a long list,
Richard. It's a very long list. I will power through it as quickly as I can. Luckily, it's a short show. So I told my story of the Verizon cable card, trying to return it. I eventually did receive a return box that I was able to put my card in and send back to them. And I have confirmed that they have removed the card from my account. So hooray for Verizon for finally getting it right on my 5th try to get rid of my cable card.
I don't think they deserve a hooray.
Now, a couple of weeks ago, I was talking about how my main remote control that I use, the Harmony add-on remote, had died while I was away. And of course, that's problematic because that's how you control everything. And it was the battery. And it was actually, I think, a fault in the battery connection. And I was never able to get it working consistently enough. And you can't buy that remote from Harmony anymore.
You can't?
You can't. You can buy the Harmony Companion, which is a remote that comes with a hub and has some smart home buttons on it. It's a little bit bigger than that add-on remote. It's the same format, though. It doesn't have a screen or anything. But I really like the size and the format of that remote and that it still lets me use my Elite if for some reason I want to bring that out. And after a week of trying to use the Elite and getting fed up with the second long delay that no remote should ever have, period, I decided that I was going to take matters in my own hands. And I went to eBay and I bought three new Harmony Smart add-on remotes. So I have backups for when the old ones die.
So we know that you hoard digital media, but now you're hoarding Harmonies.
I'm hoarding universal hoarding Harmonies. Yes, I am. This is, in my opinion, the best remote that anyone's made for my household anyway. It's just really easy to understand. Guests understand it without having to train them on it. I do have to tell them, oh, that notes icon, that's what you use for Apple TV, but think iTunes, and then they're, oh yeah, okay, I get that. So it really works well, and it has all the buttons. It's not trying to hide buttons. So I have one in play and two on deck just in case. And I actually use the same remote in my office too. I have a Harmony set up in my office with that same style remote. So now I'm prepared for both of them to die sometime in the future if necessary. Yes. Or as Rob mentions in the chat, if chance the zombie apocalypse should come, I'm good on remotes. So as far as TV watching, I have been watching a lot of TV. Superstore, The Conners, Modern Family. Started a new series on Apple TV. I think I mentioned this before, Mythic Quest. I'm a little bit more than halfway through that. That's the story of a gaming house and the craziness that ensues, very Silicon Valley-like from what I'm told. Also watching and trying to keep up with the new episodes of This Is Us and New Amsterdam. Started season 6 of The Flash, season 8 of Arrow. That's the final season of Arrow, so you can stop making fun of me about that. Although, quite frankly, I am going to miss Arrow more than I will miss Flash when it's gone. Flash is going to continue after this season, but Arrow has already ended, so I'm kind of disappointed. I thought that was a good series. Season 5 of Grace and Frankie now. So we finished 4, and now we're working on 5. We've been watching the more recent episodes of Last Week Tonight, and we started CNN's The Windsors, which is their documentary on basically the history of, I don't know that I would call it the modern crown, but the crown since the age of television and radio, for the lack of any better way of framing that. And let's see, watching Picard. This time, I'm watching Picard on my 3-month free trial of CBS All Access that I got when I upgraded my Roku to a new Roku streaming stick, which is 4K capable and UHD and all that sort of stuff. So I got the deal on that. That was on sale on Amazon. And I think of it as like, all right, so, you know, free CBS for 3 months. That's all I need. I'm good.
Yeah, for sure.
Plus, you know, I've tried watching Picard other ways, and I can't deal with not having the full quality, the full audio. Just, I can't do it. It's not as good.
Mm-hmm.
I am up to date on Homeland. I'm really bummed about that because I thought I was an episode behind, and when I watched last weekend's episode, there wasn't an extra one for me to watch, and now I'm bummed. because it's really good.
So I do want to ask, I mean, I've already gotten crap earlier in the episode,
right,
for not being caught up on Homeland. Is this season back to being about terrorist?
Yes.
Okay. That makes me a little bit more interested in it then. I didn't love the last season.
Last season was a character exploration more than anything else, I think.
And, yeah.
And it plays into this season. So that's important. But mm-hmm. I also did like the political aspect of last season because they were playing to headlines of the time. They were playing to the possibility of a female president. They were playing to, this concept of a militia group holding up on their compound. These were ripped from the headlines, you know?
Yeah, right. So it was like Law and Order. Homeland.
Okay, fair point.
Right. So I have one other quick homeland thing.
Okay.
I took my daughter to a trampoline park and I about fell out of my chair when I turned around and saw a guy who looked exactly like Sergeant Brody. It was super weird.
Oh, wow.
He looked exactly like him. Yep. Yep. From the first few seasons of Homeland.
That's wild.
Yeah. I was like, you can't be him. I know what happened to him. I won't say anything.
Well, he's also in another show now, I think. But anyway.
Probably.
All right. So I finished the series I was talking about on Apple TV Plus called Visible. That was really, really good. I started my Westworld rewatch because season 3 starts in about 2 weeks. So starting with the finale of season 1, I am rewatching, and I am a couple episodes into season 2 now. And let's see. I watched an episode of like the really old and somewhat now cheesy, but still like a guilty pleasure to watch, Epic Tech Homes. This is what smart homes looked like 7 or 8 years ago. And then we watched Knives Out. You have any interest in seeing that? Do you know about that movie?
I thought I'd heard of it, but I can't remember even what it is.
It was kind of this winner's sleeper. It was an all-star cast Agatha Christie style murder mystery. And it was really good. Really, really good. Also, the best performer in my movie lineup. But really happy that we watched that. I thoroughly enjoyed that. Now, two other things I wanted to mention here. Starz is having their deal again where you can sign up for their service and get 3 months of Starz for $5 a month. This time, to do that, you need to do it directly through Starz, which is perfect because the last time I did this, I did it through Hulu. So I don't have a Starz account yet, and I could do it as if I were a brand new customer. Can you tell I'm getting good at gaming this? And
yes,
then
you are.
Also, we didn't talk about this as a news item, but there have been some updates to Pluto TV. And I don't think we've ever really talked about Pluto TV. It's just kind of a streaming service of basically aggregating all of those off-brand or actually branded, but kind of D or C class channels that you can get over the top. And there are now about maybe 200 of them all pulled together in a linear fashion through Pluto TV. It's free. It's ad supported, but they've also now added a bunch of movies, a bunch of TV series, and most importantly, a 24-hour James Bond channel.
That's cool.
That is cool.
That's the first thing I've ever heard interesting on Pluto TV.
That's fair.
Because you talk about Pluto having 200 channels. It's 200 channels of crap I don't want to watch.
Yeah. But, you know, I was poking through some of the TV series they have. And yeah, there's some weird stuff there. But there's also some cool series that I enjoyed watching. One that caught my attention was a sci-fi series called Primeval that I don't think you can stream anywhere anymore. So it was cool to see that there. Again, it's all ad supported. So you're not paying anything, but get ready to deal with a barrage of repetitive ads.
Yeah.
That is finally it for me.
Okay. My list is significantly shorter. Significantly. I did actually watch something. Other than just hockey.
Okay.
I'm not even sure if I've watched much hockey. Maybe one game. A little indie movie that most people probably haven't heard of called Frozen 2.
Oh, I did hear about that.
My daughter, oh my gosh, she cannot get enough Frozen 2. And it finally came out on services and disc and all that stuff. So she's been begging me to watch Frozen 2 because Jen took them both to see it in the theaters, but I didn't go. And she's like, you have to watch it, Dad. Okay. So I watched it. It's fine. It's not better than the first
it's
one.
It's fine.
It's fine.
I haven't even watched it yet.
It's fine. Yeah. It's really not nearly as good as the first one, but whatever. It's got Kristen Bell. So there's that. Audiobooks. I've done two of them, or at least finished. Well, I finished one, started another one. Boring, you know, sort of boring, but classic management book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. I think this book came out in like 1989 or something like that. It's been out forever.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good book.
Covey.
You know, if you're into that sort of stuff. Right, Franklin Covey.
A little,
right.
Little bit of a screwball, but still a good book.
I don't know much about him, but yeah, the book was good. And then just yesterday, I started The Drawing of the Three. This is book two in Stephen King's Dark Tower series. And wow, that book did not go where I was expecting it to go. Stephen King's an interesting guy.
These are all really, really long, aren't they?
No.
No?
The audiobook of this one is only 13 hours, I think.
Oh.
And I think the first book, The Gunslinger, was even shorter than that.
Oh, for some reason, I thought these were very long books. Okay.
Nope. Compared to like the Tom Clancy books that I was reading, they were like 30 hours, yeah. 35 hours.
True.
Yeah. And then on the gaming side, I haven't played a ton, although I will admit I was playing this while watching Frozen 2. I grabbed my Switch and I've been playing a little bit of Civilization 6. I've loved the Civ games in the past, and a friend of mine got this for Switch, so I figured, yeah, I'll wait for it to come out on sale, and it did. I was able to pick it up for $15. So this is what I've been like. This is the right kind of game for Switch, because it's, you know, I still kind of treat the Switch as like a mobile device, because it is. So a lot of times I use the Switch to play something when I've only got, you know, 5 to 20 minutes. And because Civilization 6 is just, you know, taking a turn, I can just stop after a turn and pick it up the next time I grab my Switch. So it works really well for that. So Handsome Rob wants to know, isn't the screen too small on the Switch for Civilization? It would be better if it was bigger, sure, but you can zoom in and out with the trigger buttons. So it really hasn't been too burdensome. There are a couple of usability things where I really wasn't sure how to get to a couple of UI elements using the sticks. But since I was in handheld mode, I was able to tap it. I eventually figured out how to do it with the joysticks and the D-pad, though. So if you fiddle around with stuff long enough, you figure out how to control all these different things, because there is a lot there for these big world building strategy games. But Civ 6, it's a good one on Switch, and it seems like it's been on sale a lot over the last couple of weeks.
Cool.
So grab that if you want. And that's it for me. So that's it for the show also. So if you want to get a hold of us, we're on Twitter. Richard is at Richard Gunther. I'm at Josh Pollard, and the website is at DigiMediaZone. We're also on Instagram and Facebook and all those other places. All the links for those are in the show notes over at thedigitalmediazone.com, where you can also find our other podcast, well, Richard's other podcast called Home On. And there was a new episode of that released last week.
Indeed, we had talked previously about the episode with the CEO and founder of Alibra, Zohar Shinar. We had a really cool discussion about their product Bond Home, which I use actually and am a big fan of. And coming up in our next episode, I already spoke with Blake Arnold, one of the product managers from Samsung's SmartThings. We had a fantastic conversation about everything that they have been doing to reinvigorate the community to migrate to the new version of SmartThings. So I think people will enjoy that.
Yeah, I can't wait to listen to that episode, especially since I'm a SmartThings user. So cool. All right, and then you can join us every week as we record this show live. We do it on Mixer, but you don't have to try and figure out Mixer. You can just go over to the DMZ, and there's buttons there to get you there. We are also releasing these episodes on YouTube now. So there's a link to our YouTube channel at the website there, of course. Also, subscribe, ring the bell so you get notified when the new episodes are available. And I'm trying to release those like night of or the next morning. So you can actually get the YouTube video prior to the podcast coming out. So If you just can't wait, YouTube is the place to check out Entertainment 2.0.
Good hint.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's going to do it for episode 511. He's Richard Gunther. I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.